Commissioner Moyer is joining virtually. Audience members, I would like to start by asking you to please silence your electronic devices. I would also like to remind you that in addition to the audience in this room, we have people watching and listening online, so please consider your language and comments and testimony today. Today's meeting is a hybrid board meeting. Some presenters and guests will appear in person, and some will appear virtually. For those presenting virtually, please mute your mic when not speaking, and when presenting, make sure to unmute your mic and turn on your camera. For those joining us in person to provide public testimony or present, please turn your mic on when you begin speaking so the green light is showing, and off when you've completed your remarks so the red light is showing. And for all presenters, please state your name for the record before speaking or responding to questions. May I have a motion on the consent calendar?
So moved.
Commissioner Brim Edwards moves, Commissioner Jones Dixon seconds. Approval of the consent calendar.
Commissioner Moyer?
Aye.
Commissioner Singleton?
Yes.
Commissioner Brim Edwards?
Yes.
Commissioner Jones Dixon?
Yes.
Chair Vega Peterson?
Aye. The consent calendar is approved.
Opportunity for public comment on non-agenda matters. This is a time for the board to hear public testimony, not for board deliberation. When it is your turn to speak, I will call your name and unmute you or call you to the presenter's table. I'll set a timer for 3 minutes when you begin speaking and announce when your time is up, at which point please wrap up your sentence. We have four people signed up for verbal testimony, and I'll call them now. Injured and pissed off, Leonid Krivolenkov, Charles Johnson, and Lightning.
Morning. N-O. N-O-R-M-A-L, no normal. That spells no normal. There hasn't been anything normal about my case at all. From the 7 dog attacks on my service animal that the Multnomah County Board of Commissioners passed boards that it allowed, it's against Oregon state law to even interfere with the service animal. And of course, the medical neglect and the medical abuse, if you don't call medical abuse, a woman, like I said, in my apartment building had 3 hip surgeries on the same hip, and they only have a life expectancy of 80% for the first year of surviving. 20% of the people die from hip surgeries each year. It's more than 70,000 people, and I survived my hip surgery. But it was the spinal cord injuries that they ignored that laid me up like this. And of course, well, all legal recourse that I had was to go to the Multnomah County Court and change my name to Injured and Pissed Off, and I spell pissed off as one word just to piss them off more. They can't deny any of the things that they've done. It's all on public record. I've been fighting with shitty for 21 years since Labor Day of 2004. I moved here to Portland. I was homeless then, and I'm homeless now since August 17th. I think that it's like 20 or 21 days now. It took me some 3 months to even get housing. I had to go to legal aid to do that because they wouldn't allow my service animal that weighed more than 25 pounds at the time. They wouldn't allow any dog. I guess even the guide dogs they wouldn't allow till that. Now I'll just see how long it takes to... they did a real good job, too, Home Board, evicting me. I went to court once, February 6th, and took some pictures as I was leaving the courthouse with that gasoline truck that parks across the outside of it. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm Bridge Crane Charles Simpkin Johnson, and it's nice to be back. I am curious, we all consented there on C1, a U.S. Aging grant. There's only the APR, so you know, obviously this money is money we're going to go for. We hope it's enough, but I think that maybe one of the special convocations you do needs to be about the displacement of aging people. We've heard that the fastest growing segment of homeless people is the elderly or people over 55, depending on you know whose flavor statistics we're using. So obviously we need to get as much money into aging and disability. I don't know if that's a standard practice to lump all that together or not. I've never really learned, even though I go to that office, when my $60 worth of SNAP doesn't show up, I go into the ADVSD's office, but I don't know if there's separate specialists for assistant directors in those departments for veterans, for disabled people, and for aging. The other thing you should look into is like a joint membership with the city into the national whack-a-mole situation. As a frequent diner at the Blanchette or Blanchet House, I get to see Flanders a lot, where Cascadia has a building that's been vacant for a long time. It was in the budget. We'll see what the feds do for them. But one day it's been purged of homeless people, and then the next day it's up to record capacity. And really, I think we need, even though the city is doing something three blocks away, where we had another homeless experiment go up and come down. We used to have a bunch of little white shed, tiny houses next to the new Gladys McCoy building. And then we couldn't keep that going, so those went away. And now the city is doing something there. Instead of bragging about how many community-based organizations we're partnering with, we need to have consistent on-the-ground presence in that neighborhood that has a better coordination of what housing is really available. There are weird things that happen in the housing market about who gets placed where, when. We see people in wheelchairs go for years, and then we see people who have at least better physical mobility but maybe invisible disabilities score apartments that we didn't even know were Section 8 until 120 days after they get in there that it's a building. And particularly Park Tower is going to need some attention. Gress taking over from Harsh and Schnitzer and JCS. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Morning.
Yes, my name is Lightning. I represent Lightning Superhumanity, We the People. One of the things, concerns I have is we haven't really addressed again the body-worn camera issue on getting those on the sheriffs and the correction officers. And again, if you don't have any control of that, which I don't think you have virtually any, why don't we just, all of you, write up a letter and send it to the governor and she can mandate it. She has the power, the authority to do that. You had another person die in the jail. How many people do you need to have die in the jail before you decide to at least, at the very least, get some body-worn cameras on the correction officers and all the patrol officers? And the insurance companies will appreciate that too, because that'll keep your rates low. Now, when we're talking about intel again, and we're all equity owners, participants in intel now, and the reality is I really like that CEO. I really think he's a good CEO. He's very knowledgeable through the tech industry and has invested in over 250 to 500 different companies. Very knowledgeable. Now, one of the things I want to see at Intel is that they need to focus on creating the most value added to that company. And basically, he's going to have to bring in an engineer that can really do this. And Elia, I think, is the one to do that. He owns the company called Super Intelligence. Mark Zuckerberg just tried to buy it at $35 billion, and he just laughed at Zuckerberg. And what I want to see have happen is that they bring Elia over into Intel, and he begins to look over Intel, the full picture on what he thinks can be done as far as super AI. And again, now he has an office in Israel, he has an office in San Francisco. So President Trump, you do have some influence there. You and Mr. Netanyahu can have a discussion with him on the benefits to the United States of America on building that company and then buying down the national debt and then buying these startup companies and begin to fill up these empty office buildings in Portland. And we can begin to bring the whole industry back at once. And now Lip-Bu, from the CEO from Intel, he's a big basketball fan. And to Mr. Bu, you need to step in and be a participant on buying the Blazers. I expect you to be a part owner of the Blazers, and this is going to be very beneficial to Intel. And again, basketball is your favorite sport. So again, I expect you to step in and purchase a percentage of the Blazers. Thank you.
Thank you.
That's all the public testimony we have. So I'll move on to R1, resolution approving an increased contract price for the Selwood Library Refresh Project.
Thank you, Tayshia. May I have a motion? Commissioner Bram Edwards moves. Commissioner Singleton seconds. Approval of R1. So as our library folks are coming down to the dais, I will just say that this is similar to what we did earlier with the Rockwood Library refresh a few weeks ago, with additional funding available to go over budget to make additional investments. So I will turn it over to them to talk more about this stewardship of dollars from the library bond and how we're putting it to work. Good morning.
Good morning, Chair and Commissioners. My name is Heidi Leibrandt. I use she, her pronouns, and I am the Procurement and Contracting Manager for the Department of County Assets. We are here seeking approval from the board to increase the contract price for an additional $130,933.11 for the Library Capital Bond Program Selwood Refresh Project. This increase exceeds the 33% authorized limit on a given contract. The increased costs are due to added scope, including upgraded lighting and replacing the storefront door. I will now turn it over to Kate Vance for background information.
Thank you, Heidi. Good morning, Chair and Commissioners. My name is Kate Vance. I use she, her pronouns. I am the Deputy Director for the Library Capital Bond Program. This resolution affects Library Capital Bond Program offer 78228A in Fund 2517, which funds light touch updates and efficiencies to public areas of 11 libraries not undergoing major renovations as part of the bond program. These projects will ensure the libraries are able to take advantage of system-wide changes, provide safe, modern, and welcoming spaces for patrons. Selwood is the 10th of 11 refresh projects. Due to significant contingency levels across the overall program, executive leadership approved the releasing of a portion of these funds to absorb several future capital improvement projects into the bond program. Upgrading lighting at Selwood Library was identified as beneficial scope to combine with the existing Selwood Library Refresh Project to minimize overhead costs and to mitigate impacts to library patrons and staff. Executive leadership also approved replacing the storefront door, which is at the end of its service life and is not functioning well. The board was notified of the release of these contingency funds during the board briefing on April 15, 2025. Final pricing was received after the guaranteed maximum price amendment was executed. There are no change to the Multnomah County Capital Construction Go Bond Fund 2517. These funds will be added to the project budget from within available contingency within the fund.
Don't make it go on.
PCRB Rule 49-0910-3 requires of the board approval when increased costs of renovation or remodeling exceed 33% of the original contract price. And on November 3rd, 2020, voters approved Measure 26-211, bonds to expand, renovate, construct library branches, facilities, increase safety, which authorizes the county to general issue obligation bonds to finance capital costs for updating, renovating, constructing, and refreshing libraries across the county. A bond community oversight committee made up of 10 community members is active. The purpose of this capital bond oversight committee is to provide independent oversight and public accountability on the progress of Measure 26-211. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Appreciate the overview of how these dollars will be used. We do have public testimony on this item, so I'll go to see if there are any board questions, but first we'll ask for the public testimony. Stacia?
One person signed up, Charles Johnson, Bridge Crane.
Good morning again. Still Bridge Crane, Charles Simca Johnson. And I love money for libraries. I also love money that actually delivers results in serving houses people and helping them get housed. And I think one thing you've probably vibed on is that your constituents were all a little concerned about if the government's efforts are overly fractured. We had to join Office of Homeless Services, that became the Homeless Services Department. And then more than ever before, when we had that, now the city is off on its own thing, doing some things that may or may not have a realistic impact on homelessness. Over here, the voters created a separate library board, but it's really just y'all. I don't know if that was actually the best choice. Maybe we should have invested in having an independently elected library board. I like democracy. But since we're here, it's always a little confusing about when you have to reconvene as a library board and when you don't. And if there's a library bond advisory board, do they report to a convened library board or to the Board of County Commissioners? And imagine Commissioner Singleton's brain, and maybe Ms. Moyers also has already raised to, how good are we doing at having an accurate representation on the library bond advisory board and the library advisory board that really reflects the community? So I hope that those advisory bodies can be more incorporated into processes like this, where we decide that at a building we lease, oh, that's another question. How that was before your time, and I doubt that there's an option for you to, I don't even remember exactly what the structure is in Selwood, whether there's apartments on top of the library like there is in Hollywood or not. But when you as a public body make those interesting decisions to not own the libraries, to lease back in a building, there really should be every year a bottom line proof that that was the best decision. How do we decide not to own our library buildings, but that we're gonna work with a developer to have apartments on top of a library and or whatever's going on in Selwood? That's only the case for certain in Hollywood, so that we know that people are getting apartments, either that we're doing a great job of having accessible apartments for a diverse group of people in that building, or if it's stuck full of frou-frou high renters, that the taxpayers are getting some kind of benefit. So let's go ahead and pump this money into Selwood and fix the front door, but look at the overall value we're getting from different arrangements we have at the library. Thank you very much.
Thank you. All right, so we'll see if there are any questions from the board. We'll start with Commissioner Moyer. All right, no questions there. Any questions? Any questions down here? Okay, no questions. Thank you so much for providing such a detailed presentation, and we are excited about the use of these funds and all the great things that are going to be happening at the library here. So thank you so much. Tayshia, can we have a roll call vote?
Commissioner Commissioner Moyer?
Aye.
Commissioner Singleton?
Yes.
Commissioner Brim Edwards?
Yes.
Commissioner Jones-Dixon?
Yes.
Chair Vega Peterson?
Aye. The resolution is adopted.
R2, public hearing and reading of an ordinance amending MCC Chapter 15, firearms, and declaring an emergency.
May I have a motion?
So moved.
Commissioner Singleton moves. Commissioner Brim Edwards seconds. Approval of R2. So I want to thank Commissioner Singleton and Brim Edwards for bringing this ordinance forward, and I will turn it over to them. I also want to thank, though, our COO, Chris Neal, and our Workplace Security Director, Dorothy Elmore, for being here to support today's conversation, if there are any questions about that. I was like, where are they? There we go. I see y'all. Commissioner Moyers or Commissioner Brim Edwards, Commissioner Singleton or Commissioner? Okay, great.
I will kick us off. Antasia, I think you have slides. Good. Okay. So as those are coming up, I think just to share, I want to appreciate Commissioner Brim Edwards as well for working on this together. I'm really glad that we're able to bring it forward, and we will run through a presentation. I also have an FAQ that the team has drafted that I'll hand out. Commissioner Moyer, we emailed it to you, and then we'll also get it posted online. Just to help answer some potential questions that folks may have. So we can move to the next slide. So this is really about us, our commitment to a safe and welcoming county. We want to ensure that residents, employees, and visitors can access our public spaces in an environment that is safe and welcoming. We know that our buildings serve vulnerable populations, and the presence of firearms in public buildings, even when carried by individuals with a concealed handgun license, can contribute to that culture of fear and undermine trust and safety within the community, as well as increase the risk of accidental discharge, intimidation, or escalation during conflicts. Next slide.
Thank you, Commissioner Singleton, for bringing this forward with me, and also want to thank our staff and County Council for the guidance in drafting this revision. So one thing is just like, why are we bringing this forward now? And it's a great question. There's lots of speculation. But in June of 2025, the Oregon legislature passed Senate Bill 243, also known as the Community Safety Firearms Act, which went into effect on September 1st, 2025, so just a few days ago. The legislation grants the governing body of a city, a county, or a district the ability to adopt a policy or ordinance restricting licensed concealed firearms in certain public buildings. Now, this is very similar in many ways. There's some differences, but similar in many ways to legislation that passed a few years ago that allowed school districts to do the same thing. So if you travel around the state, depending on the school district, you might see school districts already have implemented this and posted it. It's similar, it's somewhat, this most recent piece of legislation is somewhat narrower, but I think the same spirit. So state law will require that local jurisdictions post online and display clearly visible signs at all normal points of access or entry into applicable buildings about the restrictions, and also notes the removal of the affirmative defense for concealed handgun license holders. So one of the things that's important to note is there already are restrictions on loaded and unloaded firearms in public buildings. And this in general would extend the prohibition to licensed concealed handgun holders. And people might think, well, that's kind of a small universe, but actually in Multnomah County, there's about 37,000 licensed concealed handgun owners, so it's not actually a small universe. And that prohibition would be extended to applicable county buildings. Next slide, please. So just some of the details. This ordinance would amend the code, Chapter 15, and what it does is removes this affirmative defense. And again, we, the county would, if this ordinance is adopted, we would need to notice that we're removing this affirmative defense as part of our code. There's a question what sort of exemptions there are. There are some exemptions that the legislation doesn't allow for. So if we were to implement this, adopt this ordinance, individuals that would be exempt is, this is not an exhaustive list, but a few examples: a person authorized by the Multnomah County Sheriff, a government employee authorized or required by their employment or office to carry firearms, or a security guard employed at a financial institution insured by the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation. And for what it's worth, those are very similar to the exemptions that are in some of the, like the school district exemptions. And you might be wondering about that last one, but like, for example, if you have an ATM, oftentimes when people come to change the money out in the ATM, that they have a weapon. And I'm going to pass it back to Commissioner Singleton.
So this ordinance will be implemented through administrative procedures. There has been already some initial discussions with Dorothy, as well as COO's office, the county attorney, Multnomah County Sheriff, district attorney, really doing some of that outreach and wanting to make sure we put forward the best ordinance possible. Violations of any of the provisions could lead to exclusion from those buildings or from that specific building. However, if the ordinance is approved, we do plan to do additional outreach and education that will continue with all county departments. Next slide.
Okay, and this last slide just is an example so people can get a sense of what signage could look like. Again, this is from a school district signage after the passage of the law that allows school districts to activate this prohibition on concealed handguns in schools. These signs are posted outside of every door. You can see that choice was made that they have, you know, it translated into, in this case, the five major world languages that are used in the school district. The counties clearly would be somewhat different because the statute just is written somewhat different than for other jurisdictions other than the school districts, but gives you a sense of like what the notice would look like. So it's pretty hard to miss these signs at any entrance to the schools, and so it just gives people an example of how the implementation could look. And that is it, I think, unless you have some additional comments.
All right, thank you so much. Tayshia, did we have any public testimony on this item?
Yes, we have one person signed up to speak and we received one written testimony.
All right.
Charles Johnson.
Hey, Bridge Grain, Charles Simca Johnson again, and thank you. The only thing I would add is that even though, I guess since this is legislative hearing, maybe you have to be particularly focused, we would love to see you spend an equal amount of time, equally public, just talking about gun violence and gun safety in the community generally. It's everywhere. It's not just when I ride the 4 or the 44 or the 24 in the Dawson Park vicinity. When I lived in the manner that I was living, out past 82nd, maybe 85th, right next to a Bible college, 150 casings were recovered at an apartment built complex. So definitely I support a lot of gun sense and gun safety moves. One thing I was surprised to hear is that since we know there are concealed carry people, and this is mostly seen as creating some glitchy impacts, I don't know about the possibility and expense of direct mailing them. Also, since they're up, supposedly the most responsible, most constitutionalized citizens we have, Surely they would understand that if they make a mistake or have a misunderstanding, a small fee, fine, that covers the problem is also okay. If you've been, especially if we can do a direct mail notice to these people, and then they come in and they find out, oh, I can't use an affirmative defense or whatever, it's thank you very much, pay your $25. So the signage, I like an improvement. I think it's kind of ridiculous. Some places we go, we see just very boring signs that say, you can't bring your gun in here. And I really hope that the signage will include some reference, maybe a QR scan code, and go and talk not only about the specific risks, possibly of a fine, but also the steps that we're taking as a county and through the LIPSIC to get a good trend on reduced gun violence of all kinds, whether it's people committing suicide in their home with their guns or brutal on-the-street homicides. Let's do this plus everything else we can to get the number of gun fatalities and gun injuries declining. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We'll go to the board for any questions on this. We'll start with Commissioner Moyer.
I think it's pretty straightforward. I appreciate Commissioner Brim Edwards and Commissioner Singleton bringing this forward. I am curious about how long we think it would take us to get the signage up and begin this policy being in place.
Great, thank you, Commissioner Moyer. I don't know if you want to answer that, or I can ask Chris to come forward.
Yes, please.
Okay, and as Chris is coming down here.
As the implementer.
Yes, I will say, thank you, Commissioner Moyer, for that question. I will say there are a couple steps even before creating the signage, and one of those is making sure that we're doing the work on the administrative side to determine which buildings actually are eligible for this for the signage and for this policy based on how the legislation is written. So, and Chris has been involved in these conversations, so I'll go ahead and turn it over to him.
Yeah, I would expect all those things need to happen first. So I'd imagine within the next 45, 60 days or so, we can start moving. But yeah, there are a lot of pre-steps, especially communications-wise, that need to go out as well, that we're doing this, just internal communication, what it includes, what it doesn't, et cetera.
It's probably also important to note that even if we adopt the ordinance, the signage has to be up for it to be in effect.
Enforceable. Yeah. Okay, great. Thank you. I don't know.
It's like, don't leave. You never know.
Yeah. I figured if I stayed, you'd keep asking stuff, so.
Yeah. You can hang out because, you know, unless you want to get your steps in by coming back and forth. Commissioner Jones Dixon.
Yeah, no additional questions. Just a huge thank you to Commissioner Brim Edwards and Commissioner Singleton for being proactive in bringing this forward. So thank you.
Okay, thanks. I did have a question. I just wanted to know, did you engage with labor at all or any of the employees around the ordinance prior to this coming forward?
Yes, so my team did speak with the leadership and let them know this was coming. There weren't a ton of, I think safety is a top issue for our staff, and so there were some stories shared of people trying to conduct their work for a client and being uncomfortable with when seeing a firearm, and so I think that's been the sense so far, but of course continue to welcome engagement, and I think that's part of what we want to make sure ongoing engagement includes, is it's not just leadership at the departments, but it's the frontline staff.
Thank you, I appreciate that. And I just wanted to make sure, and yes, that, and it's my commitment that we'll continue to engage with employees as we move forward on implementing this. I don't have any other questions. I have some closing comments. I am really supportive of this action. It allows us to take advantage of this new option from the state to increase local public safety. As Commissioner Brim Edwards said, there was similar legislation that was considered in the 2023 long session that ultimately ended up removing local government buildings from having the authority to adopt policies like this one. even though it allowed state buildings and school districts to do so. That was very disappointing for those of us on the Multnomah County Board at the time, and so that's why I'm really glad to be able to support this ordinance today. As a country, I firmly believe we just have too many guns that is causing too much violence, and we are seeing that in our headlines every single day. And so this is really a small but important step that we can do as a board to create safer spaces in our county and to take advantage of the tools we have available to do that at the local government level, which frankly aren't a lot of tools that we have. I do want to, as we talk about the implementation, I do want to highlight the importance of clear communication about this ordinance, as well as our work to answer the operational questions that have been raised. So I'm looking forward to working with Chris on the administrative process to help us identify the buildings where these signs will be posted. It's important to know, I think, what this, to clearly communicate what this is and what this is not. This will result in signs being posted for public notice. It is not weapons detection. It is not asking county staff to intervene. An important step is to determine which county buildings this will and will not apply to, and we need to work through that legal clarification as part of our next steps. So I want to thank everyone who is working behind the scenes to make this actionable this fall. I appreciate the discussion today, and again, appreciate Commissioner Singleton and Commissioners Brim Edwards for bringing this forward today. And I wanted to open up from closing comments.
So I just had a final comment, and I wanted just to perhaps address the public comment that referenced having a broader conversation about gun violence. And I do want to note that when we surveyed the members of the local public safety coordinating commission, gun violence was definitely a topic that the local public safety leaders were interested in exploring, just given the elevated levels of gun violence in the community over the last several years. It really recently was the focus of one of our LIPSEC meetings. And I look at today's ordinance, if we adopt it, this is just one piece of like a much, much larger series of actions that we need to take to reduce gun violence and the presence of guns just out in the community. So this isn't a silver bullet, but is one thing that we can do, I think, to overall reduce the presence of guns and gun violence in our larger community. But it's not the only thing, and I think I believe as a county commission, one thing we can do for community safety is be looking at other steps we can be taking related to gun violence, because we do have other tools that we could pursue, and it has been, and just speaking for my district, there's been very elevated levels of gun violence over the last several years. It's been reduced the last this last year, but very elevated in East Portland, and every single one of those statistics it has an impact on a ripple effect, not just on that individual, but also the families in their communities. So again, this isn't going to have a sweeping change, but I think it's one additional thing we can do.
Thank you. Commissioner Singleton?
Anything I say would be redundant.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much. All right. Tasia, can we have a roll call vote?
Commissioner Moyer?
Yes.
Commissioner Singleton?
Yes.
Commissioner Brim Edwards?
Yes.
Commissioner Jones-Dixon?
Yes.
Mayor Vega Peterson?
Aye. The ordinance is adopted by emergency. All right. Thank you, Chris, for answering some questions. We are through our regular agenda, so now we have time for board comments on non-agenda items. I will open it up to commissioners to see who has anything to discuss. Why don't we start with Commissioner Jones-Dixon today?
Special day. So I don't have anything district-related, but I know the Eagles are playing this evening. So
that's
nothing. Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Commissioner Brim Edwards.
Yeah, I just wanted to share that Woodstock Library, which is in District 3, is reopening to the public tomorrow. It's very exciting. It didn't get the full rebuild, but it received a refresh. And I know during the closure, lots of people in the community, they had an opportunity to go to some of the other very beautiful new branches in Southeast Portland, but starting tomorrow, the Woodstock Library will back reopen for the community. So I hope everybody comes out and enjoys it and sees refreshes doesn't quite, I think, take into account all the new features that they will have there. So looking forward to going to visit it.
That is exciting. It's always exciting when the libraries are reopening in our neighborhoods. Commissioner Singleton.
Thank you, Chair. A couple of things. One, we'll be in D.C. next week for the JPAC trip. So I'll look forward to sharing back with you all what we're hearing in D.C. about much-needed transportation funding for all sorts of things that we do here across the region. I do just want to also name that D.C. is currently occupied by National Guard, and not only are they harassing folks who appear to be immigrants, but also some of the moves that they've been making about moving folks who are experiencing homelessness and moving them without anywhere for them to go and essentially disappearing people. So it is both a bittersweet trip for me where I'm not looking forward to seeing some of that, but I think it's important to just name that that's happening, and I know it's something we feel really strongly about should not be happening in our community, and I fully expect that at some point again, Portland will be on the radar of the national, this federal regime, and that I'm looking forward to continuing to stand with you all to ensure that our residents, our citizens are not disappeared. I just wanted to highlight a couple of things from Black Business Month. Last month we highlighted either a business every day on social media, I had an event every week at a business, and we highlighted a different business at board meetings, and we ended up engaging over 82 Black businesses throughout the month, which was just amazing, and I think it goes to show how diverse our entrepreneurship is, and that if you're looking for something, you can probably buy Black. So just want to continue to encourage supporting those businesses, even when it's not Black Business Month. We were just so inspired by not only the people we met, but the businesses themselves and the work that people did to get there. It was really powerful. We also wrapped up the workforce table, and we'll be having a report to share out. I think there's both things that are, of course, financial investments, but there's also things that are not financial and are frankly some low-hanging fruit that we were, I think, all at the table surprised to hear there wasn't coordination around. So I just want to really appreciate Garrett from the chair's office, as well as multiple staff from Commissioner Jones Dixon's office, who are helping to support that work. And I look forward to bringing those recommendations forward to you all. And I think some folks in the departments, because again, there's some low-hanging fruit that we can really just implement that won't be a financial cost and will really support folks getting into the trades. So more to come on that. Couple of quick events in the district. Albino One Block Party is the 6th from 10 to 4. No RSVP is needed. It's 1771 North Flint. Please come out and join the community for a day of celebration. Also, we have the Roseway Parkway Plaza grand opening on Saturday the 6th from 4 to 7 at Northeast 72nd and Mason. So this will be a celebration of this new community space that is really it's really beautiful. There's a beautiful mural. If you don't get a chance to come out this Saturday, please come out and check out that space. And then as Commissioner Jones Dixon said, it's just important to say that the last year's Super Bowl champion Philadelphia Eagles will be opening the season tonight. For those who may be coming out to Lombard House, don't forget to bring a jar of peanut butter that we are donating to the St. John's Food Share down the street. Thanks.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Moyer?
No, I don't have anything.
Okay, great, thank you. The only thing I have is just to express a quick appreciation for the chance to be with out with our community on Monday at two different Labor Day picnics. I appreciate that we had many members of the board, that we were all able to show up and really show the presence and support from Multnomah County there. I think it was very important for us all to be together, as we're all navigating extremely challenging headwinds at the federal level. I appreciate the many people coming out, speaking up, and supporting labor in these times, and I want to thank Local 88 for the invitation to join their picnic. It was great also to be back out at Oaks Park. So thanks, everyone, for who came out for that, and let's, remember every day is Labor Day. So thanks, everyone. That concludes today's regular board meeting. There being no further business, our meeting is adjourned.